Warning, MF Uncensored contains adult language and discussion. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to MF Uncensored. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links not only this show, but some of our other shows like the Multiverse Fancast and Cinematic Adventures. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul, with me via the Zoom studio. I'm super excited to talk to this gentleman because, and I'm going to say it now, in his media kit, he made a Terminator reference. So immediately I was like, got to get this guy on. And that is Mr. Duncan Brown. Duncan, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Yeah. I have others. I mean, we can do James Bond or Star Wars, whatever you like.
We'd be here for days then. You don't know who you're messing with in this regards. Like, you're not ready for my nerdom.
No, probably not, but we'll have some fun. So I don't mind being here for days. Be cool.
Well, I appreciate that. You're already doing better than my wife who gets sick of me after 15 minutes. Especially early in the morning. I am a handful and a half before she's had her coffee. But before we really get into it, Duncan, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself first?
Yeah, so my name's Duncan Bascom Brown. I live in Oxford. I have a wife who also occasionally gets bored with me, possibly more often than not. Anyway, I also have a daughter who never gets bored with me and never gets boring. And I guess a lot of people think that what I do is I help them to go beyond alcohol. But, you know, I don't really help people to stop drinking. I think what I do is I help people to start living.
See, I like that because a lot of people equate drinking, substances, whatever it is, to living that right lifestyle. Like, I get it. So I am not the biggest drinker myself, and that's just a personal thing. It's more of a health and fitness thing. When I get stressed, unfortunately, that is one of the few things that I start to go to right away. But for our listeners, though, you had a real struggle with it, though, at first.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I started drinking sort of like early teens, and it was very social to start off with, and I thought it was something that helped me to fit in, you know, because I think that was really, really where I was with a kid when I was a kid. Just the world didn't seem to be for people like me. There didn't seem to be a place. My rather unique skill set seemed undervalued by the teaching profession. So, yeah, I mean, I struggled with all of that. And when I discovered alcohol, I was just like, whoa, this is amazing. It's like Christmas. So, yeah, I started off drinking a lot socially, and it progressed, as it often does with people. And in the end, you know, the amount of people I was drinking with went down, but the amount I was drinking went up. And yeah, I took that to its logical conclusion and ended up drinking a couple of bottles of wine a night on my own, desperately trying to ignore my wife.
Oh, God. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I've gotten to certain points where, like, I used to, same thing. I drank socially. That was it. Like, I was never somebody, I'm going to go home, open up a beer, and then, you know, hang out at home. Like, it was either we're going out drinking. It was never, I'm just drinking. And then, you know, throughout your 20s, that becomes the norm. Like, every weekend, that's what we did. Like, I remember one time my friends and I had a conversation. We're like, what did we used to do before we would just go out to the bar on weekends? And we couldn't really think of what we used to do. But, you know, and then as you get older, as you progress and all these things, like suddenly you're coming home, you're pouring a glass of wine or you're socializing with your spouse, whatever it is. And then things like the pandemic happens where everybody was drinking all the time. Like my wife was working from home at the time, and I'd come home and she'd have like a glass of wine. I'm like, it's 3 p.m. She's like, I was bored. Like, I had nothing else to do. I was like, write a book, do something. It. But, you know, obviously a lot of people struggled with it. Now, how did you find yourself kicking all the alcohol?
So, I mean, I went through a process, and that's one of the things that I always like to stress. You know, you hear these stories where people go, oh, I was staring in the mirror 4 a.m. and I had this blinding realization. The only realization I've had staring in the mirror at 4 a.m. is that you don't achieve anything by staring in a mirror at 4 a.m. You just got to actually get on and do something, man.
Right.
So, yeah, I did. I got on and did something, and I stopped smoking. I stopped drinking, and I sorted out my diet. And I didn't do that in a weekend. I did that over the course of 3 or 4 years. And you know what? I just feel a whole lot better for it. And it's funny you say, you know, like, well, if you're bored, write a book. I mean, when I stopped drinking, I just I had all of this time and I had all of this energy and I had all of this focus. So yeah, I wrote a book.
For the record, I did not intentionally tee up for that one, but I will take credit for teeing you up for that one. So obviously, yes, you wrote a book. Tell us a little bit about the book, how that started, and like what was your story with it?
Oh yeah, well, so I've been sober for quite a while, 8.5 years now. So the first book I wrote was rubbish. So let's not talk about that one.
Congratulations.
It was about local government. It's very, very niche. You know, if you happen to be doing a specific job in British local government, then you'd love it.
Best
But
book ever. Yeah.
yeah, but that describes almost none of your listeners. So the most recent one I wrote was called Real Men Quit, which is just helping men to quit through the medium of Terminator references.
Love it. That, see, I can get behind that. Now, for you though, like obviously you went to sit down and write this book. Did you and is it all about just quitting alcohol, or is it quitting different facets of things that are bad for you?
Yeah, so the one I wrote before, Get Over Indulgence, that's much more kind of like looking at the whole process because there's an awful lot of similarities. If you want to remove alcohol from your life, if you want to remove junk food, if you want to remove cigarettes, it's essentially the same process. You know, there are little variations for each thing, but in essence, you can apply the same process. But I wanted to write something specifically for men, specifically about alcohol, because, you know, we drink.
Oh, yeah.
According to the World Health Organization, if you put four drinks on the bar, three of them are going to get drunk by men, and one of them is going to get drunk by a woman. So we're out drinking the women like colossally. But if you actually look at recovery circles, they are now becoming more and more dominated by women. So men are more likely to have a problem, but less likely to ask for help. And you know, alcohol causes a huge amount of misery, not just to men, but in general. And I don't think we're particularly well served as a group, male drinkers, probably because we're just too busy talking about sport and not really doing anything about it. So yeah, this is my attempt to change that.
Now, do you think that, especially with men, that there is a stigma about asking for help or recognizing problems? Like mental health in men is a topic that's really, it was never addressed. And now I think it's starting to come a little bit more into the light. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's a couple of very damaging misconceptions. Well, they're not misconceptions, they're illusions of truth. They're like, which is the nice way of saying they're just lies that society is trying to make you believe, isn't it? But one of them is that, you know, men have to be strong. And to be strong, they have to drink a load of alcohol. Because, I mean, what better way to prove that you're a tough guy than pour a load of poison down your throat? You know, if you can cope with that, you must be tough. And you can then couple that with the idea that, you know, if you want to be tough, you don't ask for help. You get on and you do it and you sort it out yourself and you just man up. And you add both of these things together that if you want to be tough, don't ask for help, drink a lot of alcohol. That is a recipe for disaster. That is why, on average, men are in prison more often. That's why, on average, men are involved in crime more often. That's why, on average, men, you know, commit suicide more often.
Yeah, that's a totally other subject that like nobody talks about. Like, you know, men tend to get so far past the point of help where they're either like sleepwalking through life, or they take more extreme measures, or they just end up hurting everybody around them, especially themselves. But I love the idea that like you obviously seem to be a little bit more aware of it just from your own personal standpoints, but also like the world is changing and more acceptance and more understanding towards men and their mental health issues.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I'm going to call us out as a sex. You know, I don't think we have done anywhere near enough to address the problems of men over the last 120 years. You know, if you look at the difference between the experience of being a woman 120 years ago and the experience of being a woman today, there is a massive amount of difference. And if you want to be like really, really cheeky about it, you could say the difference between being a man 120 years ago and being a man now is that we don't wear hats.
Now, that's actually really fair. Yep, that's pretty funny.
I think we have, you know, a lot has happened and things have changed and things are changing. But I think we need to acknowledge that, you know, for too long, we have not spoken up about issues that affect men around suicide, imprisonment, alcohol, you know, mental health. So much of that, it just remains unaddressed because men just don't organize in the way that women have.
And we also tend to go to extremes to get things done. Here's the best example I could possibly think of, and it actually involves myself. So I used to be a fast food addict. I loved fast food. There's a whole bevy of layers of psychological reasons why I love fast food, not because it was good, because there was feelings of blah, 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 blah. So there was one weekend where I overindulged so much. We went to an amusement park, and like it was a bunch of friends, and there was food and alcohol and this and that. And on the way home, I remember this vividly. I was like, I want to stop at Burger King. And even though I was so disgustingly full and bloated and miserable, I was like, but that's what I want. So I went to Burger King and I made myself eat a full meal there. And I got so viciously sick. I have not touched fast food since. And that was at time of recording, like 15 years ago.
Wow, that's some extreme aversion therapy. But I mean, I think it speaks to a very interesting point, doesn't it? You know, if the only way that the world has taught you to get comfort is through eating some processed junk, when you feel discomfort because you have eaten too much processed junk, your solution is to eat more processed junk. And that is the cycle which, you know, smokers, drinkers, and a lot of people who have a problem with food, you know, that's the cycle we're all in. Alcohol makes you feel bad. What do you do when you feel bad? You drink alcohol.
And it just goes around and around. Everybody the next day always says, "Oh, I should have drank too much last night." Well, you could have not drank at all. And don't get me wrong, I am super guilty of it. I during the week I try and be very good. Like Monday to Friday, you're not going to see a drink in my hand for the most part. And then Saturdays, I like to have socialize with my friends, family, whatever it is. And Sundays, my wife and I do our nice fake Italian pasta night with wine. So. But like there was a point, and I'll be the first one to admit it, where, and I'm a very healthy person. I love working out. I love eating right. Like my diet and my exercise are always on point. But because I was drinking so much, and I was drinking some pretty cheap stuff, like I was not going and buying like a $200 bottle of wine. I was like, I'm gonna get your most $14 bottle of wine, please. And it's filled with sulfates and preservatives and this and that. And it just made me bloated and gain weight, even though I was eating and exercising right. It was wild.
Yeah, the $200 stuff is still full of ethanol, which is the dangerous stuff. I mean, it's like honestly, the expensive stuff is no better for you. There's been quite a lot of research done into quality alcohol. Is it any better for you? No, not at all, because it's all got poison in it. I think what you talk about, it hits at something really, really important that, you know, I've met a lot of people who really care about their diet and they really care about their physical health. And, you know, they have an exercise regime and then they go and ruin it all by drinking alcohol. And they don't realize how much it undermines those things. So, I mean, just, you know, in terms of diet, drinking excessive amounts of alcohol, drinking even a moderate amount of alcohol is going to prevent your body from absorbing certain vitamins. So even if they're present in your diet, you are still going to be malnourished in that sense. It's also going to mess with your microbiome. It's going to give you effectively, it gives you leaky gut syndrome. It messes with your intestines so much that, you know, all of the stuff starts leaking out into your body. Like, great. In terms of exercise, of course, it messes with your sleep. Just 2 glasses of wine is enough to ruin your REM sleep by 24%, reduce the quality of your sleep by 24%. It's 2 glasses. Take that up to 3 or 4, and you're talking about 40% reduction. Do you exercise if you've had a bad night's sleep? Probably not. You know, in terms of exercise recovery, the alcohol is so incredibly pro-inflammatory that drinking after exercise is absolutely the worst thing you can do. It will stuff up your recovery completely. And the irony of that, of course, is that a lot of people who do engage in sport, what they do immediately after they finished is go for a beer, isn't it?
Of
So, which is
course.
why if you actually look at more and more professional sports people, Novak Djokovic, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lewis Hamilton, Tom Brady, Floyd Mayweather, they don't drink because they just know elite sporting performance and alcohol just don't mix.
Oh, 1,000%. But I will attest there is nothing better than a beer after the right workout. So we do a race series called Tough Mudder. It's like a mud race type thing.
I'm familiar with Tough Mudder, yep.
Yep, we've done Tough Mudder, we've done Spartan, and at the end of Tough Mudder, you get a beer. Like that is like their thing. And you know, people make fun. They're like, "You did all that for a beer?" I was like, "You don't understand how that beer tastes. You have no idea." Because really, it's just because your body's craving carbohydrates and all that stuff. So you're like everything's better after a workout. But I love the idea that you have obviously done your research. You're throwing out a lot of very technical terms that I understood 90% of them because I'm a simple man. It's very simple. But obviously, you not only have all this information, but you're very passionate about it. How did you get to this point of just knowing so much about this stuff?
So just out and out obsession. I mean, I got really well and truly obsessed with the effect that alcohol has on your body a little while ago. And I mean, the thing was, I knew it wasn't doing me any good because, like, you can't drink heavily and maintain any kind of beliefs about it being good for you. But since I've stopped drinking and since I've started to really try and understand it and try and understand the effects it has on your body, I've started to learn an awful lot more about it. I trained as a therapist. I've done lots of qualifications around nutrition, around coaching. And I do actually read scientific papers. But I think a lot of the science has progressed as well in the last 8.5 years. I think this the understanding about how even low levels of alcohol impact on your mental health, on your physical health, on your sleep, on your diet, on all of those kind of things. I think that's come along quite a lot, and more and more people are talking about it.
That's wild. It's funny you say that because about 8 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, my dad and my stepmom gave up drinking completely also. Like cold turkey, just out of nowhere, they're like, we don't drink anymore.
Yeah.
And they both swear that they feel better than they ever had in years. And they were so committed to this new lifestyle. We went to Italy 2 years ago and you're going to Italy. Like I want to drink in Italy. Like I want a glass of wine, and some pasta in Italy. They didn't touch a single drop of alcohol while they were there. No limoncello, no wine, no nothing. I was
Yeah.
super impressed. Do you ever struggle with being in social situations where everybody else is drinking?
No, I mean, so the method that I use to stop drinking and the method that I use when I work with people, you could kind of call it cognitive realignment if you wanted to sound really sciencey. But basically, what we do is we take the beliefs that you have around drinking. Typically, they're going to revolve around things like, I believe that alcohol helps me deal with stress. I believe alcohol helps me to socialize. I believe it helps me to meet people. I could go on. There are plenty. Everybody's got their own kind of like little take on all of those things. But everybody's got a lot of beliefs about alcohol. And what you believe about alcohol dictates the amount that you drink of it. So we kind of get to grips with those beliefs. We ask whether they're true. We ask whether they're helping you become who you want to be, whether they're moving you forward. And then once we've realized that they don't necessarily serve you, then we get rid of them and we kind of think about some other things that we could believe about alcohol, like it is a known carcinogen. And once you've replaced all of those beliefs, what I find is the action bit. It just generally tends to follow because if you don't desire something, you don't get tempted by it. If you don't want to drink alcohol, then it's not really hard work not to drink it. And I have not, honestly, there has not been a single moment in the last 8.5 years when I've really wanted to drink alcohol. So it hasn't been hard work to not drink it. I mean, sure, the guys take the mick out of me every now and again. They have a laugh, but like, they're as likely to call me a wimp for not drinking as they are to casually inform me they're sleeping with my wife. But that's just blokes, isn't it? That's what we do.
I see. That's the fun thing because that is what men do. We love giving each other a hard time. It was a testament when I started my current job. They said if one of the things that the guy who was training me said was if they're not making fun of you, they don't like you. And I'm like, wait, what? And I had to learn that if they were not giving you a hard time, that you weren't liked. And I was like, man, nobody's giving me a hard time. Nobody likes me. So, but that's just men. That's just like a part of our mentality. But I do love how. A lot of people can say, everybody can say drinking too much is bad. Like, there are very few people in the world, maybe some really far gone alcoholics who won't say that. But most people know, well, I shouldn't drink too much. It's not good. But there are a few people that can actually start taking those layers back and looking back and being like, well, why do you drink? And why, like, if this is your stress relief or what? So I like the idea that you kind of attack it in a multi-level system. Now, for you though, did it like take time to build your program, how you work with people, and how you talk about these things?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I trained with the world's most successful stop smoking service, and I've been working, with them for 6 years, something like that. I speak to hundreds and hundreds of smokers every year, and from working with those people, I saw, what was really working well, and then what I considered to be some gaps, and that led me to sort of like working one to one with people, and working with those people, it opens you up to what other therapeutic routes are out there, and I think it's incumbent on anybody who wants to help other people, whatever you're doing, you have to understand what's going on in the situation completely, and it's something that I think is particular to the recovery world, that some people get very, very dogmatic about the method that they use to stop drinking. And I get why, I know a lot of people who would genuinely be dead if they didn't stop drinking. Of course, they are passionate about the thing that got them free. But you have to, at some point, say, all right, there are advantages to the method that I used, but there are also disadvantages. And those other methods, they have their advantages and they have their disadvantages. And I think you've got to really kind of like study all of them. You've got to work out what is it that works with AA? Something must be working. They've been knocking around for 100 years. Something must be going well for them. It's not for everybody. But what is it that really works for some people, and how can we replicate that, and how can we provide that for people? Because if we say to people, well, you didn't succeed because you didn't work the system properly, I think that's just cruel. It's never the system. It's never the individual's fault. It is always the system's fault. The system didn't help you the way you need to be helped. So I'm definitely, I think we need to come together as a community and work on what each of our methods bring and how we can use those to better serve the people who desperately, desperately need our help.
I love it. And like, it's kind of like losing weight. There are tons and tons and tons of diet programs out there, like trillions of diets. Diet is an industry, it is a business, But what works for one person may not work for somebody else. Like my wife has a gluten sensitivity. So if she wanted to lose weight, she would just cut out more gluten because it causes her to bloat. I like my gluten. Give me extra gluten if you have it. Like everybody's going to be different in that regards. And I like that that's how you approach it. Now, I know we've been talking about drinking, but you keep mentioning smoking, and I want to ask a question. Do you find that vaping has changed the addiction to smoking or the addiction to nicotine products in general over the past couple of years?
No, not really. I've met a lot of people who vape, and they hate vaping just as much as smokers hate smoking. In fact, many of them used to smoke, and they stopped smoking because they hated it, and they started vaping, and now they hate vaping in exactly the way they hated smoking. Because ultimately, being addicted to anything is no fun. And ultimately, if you're a vapist, you're addicted to nicotine. If you're a smoker, you're addicted to nicotine. Honestly, I've helped people get off the gum. I've helped people get off the patches. I've helped people get off the lozenges. I've helped people stop smoking cigars, pipes, cigarettes, whatever. It's all the same thing, and it's all blinking horrible. And I think a lot of people in government are currently patting themselves on the back because they're seeing the graph of numbers of people smoking going down, and they're going, oh, look, we're doing so well. But if you actually look at it, there are now more people addicted to nicotine because all of the drop in smoking has been taken up by the nicotine industry. And what's so incredibly worrying about it is vaping is so much more attractive to young people.
Oh, it is bad in the United States. Like kids who would say, I would never touch a cigarette, they're disgusting, blah, blah, blah. The vaping epidemic. I work with kids, I work in a school setting, and kids are constantly vaping. And like it's not like bad kids or kids that cause trouble. It's just kids in general because it's so easy, it's quick, it's accessible, and now it's so much cheaper. They marketed it towards children with all the fun flavors, et cetera, but nicotine, alcohol, all these are businesses at the end of the day, and they're designed to attract customers.
Absolutely. And what better way to attract a customer than to give them a product that's addictive? It's like, you're not going anywhere, we own you.
Right. And trying to cut out, like, get all that stuff out of your system. Like I never did cigarette. I did cigarettes for like a hot minute, but it was a very social thing. It was never like, when I was in college in the early 2000s, a lot of people were still smoking, but it wasn't really for me after a couple of weeks. I was like, this isn't doing it for me. I'll have the occasional cigar, only celebratory, like, weddings, stuff like that. I'll have a cigar every once in a while, but not, again, not for me. I grew up with asthma, so I take my
Yeah.
breathing capacity very seriously because I hate when I hated being a kid who couldn't breathe. It sucked. But like nowadays, it's just everybody's vaping is just such a wild thing. And then drinking and both, like, it's so hard to keep track of. But then again, it's all these companies that are like, here are the colors that attract people's eyes more. Here are the brand names that, pop out. It's wild the way that
Yeah,
they
I know
create.
what we'll make our vape look like an iPhone. Oh, that's clever. And I think there's something a little bit deeper to that. If you look at most heavy drinkers, most of them smoke. If you look at anyone who's got a gambling problem, they mostly smoke. If you look at injection drug users, they all smoke. If you look at anybody who is pretty much addicted to anything apart from Facebook, then they smoke. And you've got to kind of wonder why there is this similarity. Why are they all smokers? And they all started smoking before they started gambling, before they started drinking, before they started doing drugs. And you've got to kind of like dial this back a little bit and think to yourself, well, why is the common starting point always cigarettes? And I think part of the reason is because when you become addicted to nicotine, you get this kind of urge inside your body, and you can't ever satisfy that urge. You smoke as much as you like, you will never satisfy that urge. It's just impossible. So you try to satisfy it by smoking more and more, but you can't. So you then start drinking, and you try and satisfy it by drinking, and you end up drinking more and more, and that just makes the urge worse because now you've got a couple of urges, haven't you? You've got the urge to smoke and the urge to drink, and it doesn't go anywhere. So it just gets worse and worse and worse. So I think, honestly, if we could, get nicotine out of the hands of young people, we could do so much good in our society in terms of, how it wouldn't develop into these bigger problems, which, let's face it, I mean, alcohol cost the American economy $780 billion last year. Diabetes cost the American economy $375 billion dollars last year. People talk a lot about diabetes and the problems that it's causing. People don't talk about alcohol. People talk about opioids and the problems that they're causing. And I don't want to disrespect the misery that has been caused in America by opioids, by any stretch of the imaginations. But opioids kill about 180 Americans a day. Alcohol kills about 360 Americans a day. No one's talking about the alcohol epidemic, but we should, because it has such a massive impact on our society. And, we could do something about it.
See, I love that, man. Like that, the passion, like the knowledge, it's all right there. And like you, when you start speaking, I get myself kind of sucked in. I'm like, no, wait, I gotta ask questions. So I do have a question then. All right.
Cool.
How can Luke Skywalker help me stay sober?
Okay. Well, so the thing about being a Jedi, right, is you've got to sort of like look at Luke's starting point. So when he started off, he had kind of strength and he had some order, didn't he? That those were attributes he had when he started off. And then you look at Darth Vader, he is all about strength and order, isn't he? He's got loads and loads of strength and order. The difference between the two of them is throughout the New Hope, Luke felt the force. He started to understand the universe. He developed feeling and understanding. And it is that balance between feeling and understanding and strength and order that actually allowed him to become a more complete human being and triumph over the monster. Darth Vader never understood the force. He never felt it. He never understood it. And he never achieved that balance between strength and order and feeling and understanding. And that is effectively what life is about. We go through and we start off with some attributes, and we have to find the attributes that balance them. And the problem with drinking is, of course, that it gets in the way of, I mean, typically for men, it gets in the way of us being more feeling and being understanding things better. So we just end up going back into the strength and the order bit. And actually getting sober and realizing that you have that in abundance, but you can actually develop these other attributes. We, like men, we can do emotions. It's true. It's true. And then that brings the balance, and that's what it's all about.
Oh, see, I love that. Now, we did mention the Terminator reference too. Why is half of my brain like John Connor and the other half Terminator. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying Terminator series is one of my favorite movie franchises of all time, and John Connor is one of my favorite movie concepts, not movie characters, movie concepts.
Yeah. So if you think about your brain as having two distinct parts to it, psychologists would call it system one and system two. System one is the automatic bit that does stuff without you really being aware of it. So if you want to check your mirrors when you're overtaking you in your car, or if you want to put your watch on, you don't have to think about it. You can just do it, can't you? That's system one. System two is the bit where you actually think things through. If you want to do Sudoku, or you want to do a crossword, then you're going to have to engage system two. You're going to have to actively think about it. So if you tried to put your watch on your left hand, then you would actually, no, you always put it on your left hand anyway. You don't put it on the other hand. If you try to put it on the one you don't normally put it on, you'd have to think it through. So you'd be involving a different part of your brain. But I always thought that the idea of system one and system two is just too damn confusing. So let's think about the automatic bit as the Terminator, and then the bit which actually requires thinking, that's the human being. It's got to be John Connor, hasn't it? And in terms of stopping drinking, and in terms of like really harnessing life, I think what you've got to do is you've got to go from Terminator, sorry, the Terminator, as you're a nerd, you'll pull me up on it, right? You've got to go from the Terminator to Terminator 2, from a ruthless killing machine that's trying to destroy you into your ally because it can protect you. You've got to build in these automated routines that rather than say, drink the wine, drink the beer, the automated routines say, let's go to the gym, let's have a salad, you know? So it's about acknowledging that you've got that part of you that does run on automate and reprogramming it and giving it better instructions.
I love it, man. That's awesome. And I think it's also, as a nerd, as somebody who loves all that stuff, I had a hard time in school too. When I was younger, like all the stuff that's super popular now was not popular. You got made fun of for liking things. And now the Avengers is a billion-dollar industry. And I'm like, what, where was I was born in the wrong generation. I was definitely born at the wrong time. But we are getting towards the end of our time. At the end of our episodes, though, we always like to play a little game. It's a rapid fire question game where I pick a couple of questions and I just kind of throw them out there. And if you're interested in playing, of course.
Oh yeah, cool. Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, let's see. What is the most surprising thing that you've learned during your journey?
Oh, so on Friday night, I learned to do a new trick on my rollerblades, and I thought it was going to be really, really hard. It was so easy. And I think that's the truth of it. Sometimes we think stuff is going to be really, really hard, but it actually turns out to be quite easy. Stopping drinking, really quite easy.
See, I like that. And also the fact that you were rollerblading is awesome. Rollerblades have disappeared from the American lexicon. Like you never see them at all. And just you get 5 bonus points just for being
So,
awesome.
like priority number one is the alcohol thing, but priority number two is to get everybody back into inline skating.
See, if everybody was skating, they can't you can't drink and skate. Like, done, fixed it.
Exactly.
What is a quote or mantra that guides you in maintaining a healthy lifestyle?
Oh, so the opposite of addiction is connection, is something that you hear people talk a lot. It's from Johan Hari from Chasing the Scream. I really, really love it. And I know this is quick fire, but I could spend about 45 minutes unpacking what connection actually means. It's not just about connection with other people. That is important, but connection with yourself, that is so, so vital.
What is one piece of advice for those starting their journey to overcoming overindulgence?
Just start. That's like, honestly, just put one foot in front of the other. Do something, do anything, you know. Get in touch with me, go to AA, Smart Recovery, Google it, go on Facebook, join a group for sobriety, go on Instagram, follow some people, just do something, you know, do anything. But recognize that taking that first step is so, so important. And if you have begun, then you are going in the right direction. Just got to keep going, that's all.
I love it. All right, last one. What is a memorable moment from your time as the mayor of your hometown?
Oh, so we do this thing called bun throwing. Like, this is properly weird. You're just going to confirm everything you believe about Britain. So we have this like huge building in the center of town, very old, kind of a, looks a little bit like St. Paul's Cathedral. And we throw buns off the top of it to celebrate royal events. So when we had that new king, when we crowned him, that was what we did in town. We threw buns from the top of Old County Hall so people could catch them. I think it's a way of like demonstrating how generous the true rich, worthy people in the town are. And yeah, when I was mayor, I got to throw the first bun. It was awesome.
That's so cool. I love it. All right. So we are getting towards the end of our time, and we're ending an episode with bun throwing is probably my highlight for the week. But for anybody who's interested in learning more about you or getting in touch with you, how are some ways that they can find you?
So if you can spell Bhaskaran Brown, I'm really easy to find, but you can't. So if you put getover.uk into the internet, that'll take you to a bit of my website. You can download a free copy of Get Over Indulgence, which was my book before my last book, the PDF Kindle audiobook. If you can handle me doing silly voices, then you can listen to the audiobook. That's getover.uk. But if you just put Real Men Quit into Google, you should come up with my latest book, which has Terminator references, Star Wars references. We didn't do James Bond, loads of sports, loads of really, really bad jokes
Oh, see,
as
all of
well.
those, with the exception of sports, you had me. Like all of those things, those are my things. My friends love to make fun of me because I am not a big sports guy. And yeah, my motto is go sports. That's whatever game I'm at is go sports. That's it. But Duncan,
It's
thank you
only
so much.
one chapter. You'll enjoy the
Oh,
rest.
thank
Don't
God.
worry.
All right, now I gotta pick it up. Now you did this to me. But Duncan, thank you so much for joining us. This was fantastic, and I hope any of our listeners or watchers, if you guys are having trouble with alcohol, anything like that, I hope that this kind of spoke to you. And you know, there's help out there, there's people out there, there's resources. So make sure you guys take care of yourselves so you can take care of others. But I think that's gonna wrap up, Duncan. Thank you so much.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.